Good afternoon. This is the Chorus Call conference operator. Welcome, and thank you for joining the DiaSorin first semester 2014 results conference call. After the presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Mr. Carlo Rosa, CEO of DiaSorin. Please go ahead, sir.
Yes, thank you, operator. Ladies and gentlemen, good morning, and welcome to the second quarter 2014 conference call. As usual, I will make some comments about the main events that characterize this quarter, and then I will turn the microphone to Mr. De Angelis, who will take you through the financials. Let me start with the revenues. As for the last quarter, the exchange rate had a significant impact on our sales in the quarter, which has been negative for 3 million in this quarter and 6 million euros year to date. I will make comment about sales at constant exchange rate to allow a better understanding of the real trend of the business. Let me start from sales by technology, commenting the vitamin D first and then the ex-vitamin D products. Vitamin D decline as expected, 10%. However, net of the discount provided to Labcorp in exchange of greater utilization of other products, the decline would have been 6.5%, in line with management has indicated its physiological reduction for this product. This reduction is due to increased competition, as you know, in all geographies, as well as the fact that we exchange price concession now for more business with the Clear ex-vitamin D products. Now, for the Clear ex-vitamin D, it continues to do very well. It grew 15.2% versus previous year in the quarter and 18.2% in the first half. This has been mainly driven by the introduction of new products, along which the 125 vitamin D, which is very significant for us, but I will add some specific comments to this product later in the discussion. Now, let me switch to instrument revenues, which I usually do not comment, but I would like to point your attention to the fact that this quarter, instrument sales are 12% or 2 million euro below the same period of last year. This is something that is not typical for our business since our installed base grows, and we sell on the installed base more consumables. This is due to a one-off event because in the last year of quarter two, we changed our business model in Brazil, selling our installed base to our main distributors. This has generated a one-off spike in revenues last year, making the quarter-to-quarter comparison not possible. We expect that this phenomenon is going to smooth out in Q3, and disappear in quarter four. Now, this is important to keep in mind then when we compare the quarter two results versus last year, since it takes away almost 2% of growth, making then total revenues for quarter two 2014 in line with last year at constant exchange rate. Now, let's look at sales by geography, and let's start from the U.S. Revenues in the U.S. are 4% down versus prior year, but 4% up versus Q1 of this year. Vitamin D decline is almost now fully compensated by the strong increase of Clear ex-vitamin D products, which are up 85% in the quarter, thanks to the fact that the Labcorp agreement is now in full force, and all the new non-vitamin D products, which I remind you are 16 new products we introduced at Labcorp, all these products are now in routine in all facilities. On top of this, in the U.S., all the new LIAISON XL placements are now driven by non-vitamin D business. Finally, after 2 years, of pain related to the reposition of vitamin D, we see our U.S. business stabilizing. Now, let's turn to Europe. Europe continues to post a good revenue growth, plus 2.7% in the quarter and plus 5.5% year-to-date. The result in the quarter was strong where we operate directly. Italy was plus 2%, Germany plus 16%. So we have good revenue growth in the main geographies. We had a deceleration of business in certain European export countries like Turkey, where seasonality of tenders has affected the quarter versus last year. So all good news when it comes to Europe. Asia-Pacific is up 9% with good growth in China, plus 5.4%, driven by the installation of 68 Liaison XL in the first 6 months of the year, bringing the total installed base in China between Liaison and Liaison XL to almost 600 systems. Please, you need to consider that in China we have changed our business model when we introduced the XL, where we used to sell the Liaison to the distributors, whereas when it comes to the Liaison XL, we do reagent rental. And so you see a decrease in revenues in China of instrument sales and an increase of reagent sales. The CLIA, so the Liaison products in China, in fact, are up 19% in second quarter and are up 22% year to date, in line with the company expectation. So the business in China and Asia Pacific in general is doing fine for us. Let's now discuss South America, which has been very disappointing due to the poor performance of Brazil and Venezuela, partially offset by the strong growth that we continue to experience in Mexico. As far as Venezuela is concerned, we have frozen all shipments due to the fact that payments in hard currency are not yet available. So far, in the first two quarters, we have lost €2 million in sales versus last year, and we foresee we will not ship also in quarter three. If this continues through December, we expect to lose in Venezuela €4 million in revenues compared to last year. Now, let's turn to Brazil. In Brazil, in Q2, revenues are down €2.5 million versus last year due to two effects which are very different. First one, instrument sales are down versus last year due to the one-off effect in Q2 of change of business model that we have discussed before. So this decrease is physiological. The second effect, though, that was unexpected is the fact that we are transitioning our Murex sales away from the Abbott distributors, where contracts have expired the end of last year, to our new distributors, and we are lagging behind in the process of transferring tenders, and we have delays in shipping, and this has heavily affected the Q3 result for Murex in Brazil. The CLIA products in Brazil continue to grow high single digit, in line with company expectations. We believe that results in Brazil will stabilize in Q3 and start to grow in Q4, and we should end 2014 with growth in reagent revenues in Brazil overall, although the total revenues will still be slightly behind last year due to the fact that, again, we are missing instrument revenues for changing of the business model as discussed before. I would like to comment now on the launch of new products and specifically on the newly released test for 125 vitamin D. This product has been CE marked in April, and at the same time we filed for FDA approval where we expect to get registration in the U.S. by the end of 2014. Let me remind you that this product is key since it represents 10-15% in volume of the traditional vitamin D test. It goes on the same instrument currently using our vitamin D, increasing the fidelization of current customers. And last but not least, it's highly reimbursed, allowing us to demand a high price for it. In the U.S., for example, reimbursement level is over $50, whereas for vitamin D is $42. So we have great expectation from this product. We expect that in 2014 we will generate 2 to 3 million euros of incremental revenues coming from this product, getting to over 10 million euros by the end of 2015. Now, let me move to profitability. As far as the profitability profile of the group, we reported on slide number 10 of the presentation the usual chart which shows you the statutory EBITDA margin, which has been negatively affected again by the exchange rate and by the cost supporting the molecular business. On top of this, which is something that we have seen before and we have explained before, we experienced a one-off negative effect in Brazil driven by the transitioning of the Murex line distribution, as said before, from the Abbott distributors to the new distributor. But last but not least, we have restructured our French subsidiary and our Norwegian branch, collapsing all our activity as far as molecular into Ireland. And this has had a negative impact in the quarter of 800,000 euros and 1.2 million euros in the first half of 2014. So this quarter has been impacted by two one-off effects that we don't expect to repeat in the next quarters. Actually, in the next quarters, we should have a gain coming from the restructuring. Differently from the previous years, the combination of these factors affected lower margin percentage in this period, as we discussed before. If we exclude all these effects, the EBITDA margin of the group in Q2 is solid at 37.6% and in half and in the first 6 months at 38%. Now, I will now turn the microphone to Mr. De Angelis, who is going to take you through the numbers, and then we're going to open up the Q&A session. Pierluigi.
Thank you, Carlo. Ladies and gentlemen, can you hear me? Yes. Thank you, Carlo. Ladies and gentlemen, good afternoon. Today, I would like to focus your attention on few key indicators. As far as our financial statement is concerned, I would like to highlight the cumulative net financial expense as per June 30th, 2014 was equal to 0.5 million of euros in reduction if compared with the same period of last year, mainly due to the following reason. The effect of exchange rate difference for the year positive for 0.6 million euros in the first half of 2014, while in the same period of 2013 it was negative for 0.9 million euros. And the financial balances of the subsidiary that use currency different from the group's reporting currency. I would like to focus also your attention on the lower impact on the tax rate if compared with the same period of 2013. In the first half of 2014, the effective tax rate for the period was 36.4, a decrease compared to the 38.5% of the first half of last year, mainly due to a different geographical composition of taxable income within the group, as well as to decrease the IRAP rate in Italy. Net profit for the quarter and half year is in line with last year, or if we do the calculation at constant exchange rate, is even better. Furthermore, let me highlight the main points related to the cash. In the first half of 2014, cash flow from operating activities amounted to around 53 million euros, increasing compared to 48.7 million in the first half of 2013, also due to the tight management of account receivable within the group subsidiaries. Net cash used in investing activities amounted to 14.2 million euros, increasing compared to the 12.9 million euros of the first 6 months of last year, mainly due to an increase of investment in medical equipment, which a total of an amount of 10.3 million euros in the first half of 2014 compared to the 9 million of last year. The net cash used in financing activities amounted to 33.3 million euros, which includes the repayment of debt to 3.9 million euros and the dividend payment to the shareholders of 29.9 million euros, which corresponds to 55 euros per share, and that was approved on April 23, 2014 and paid on May 22, 2014. The free cash flow for the first half of this year amounted to 39.1 million euros, an increase when compared to the 36.9 million euros of last year. As for the consolidated net financial position at June 30, 2014, was a positive amount of 107 million euros, with an increase of 9 million euros compared to December 31st of last year, thanks to the consistent cash flow from operation in the first half of this year. In view of the group's operating performance after June 30, 2014, we confirm the guidance for 2014. Thank you.
Okay, now let's open up the Q&A session.
Excuse me, this is the Chorus Call conference operator. We will now begin the question and answer session. The first question is from Patrick Wood of Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Hi there, thank you very much for taking my questions. I have two, if I may. The first is on the U.S. lab reimbursement situation. How have discussions gone sort of with some of the labs about the future situation from their profitability, and have you sort of seen any effect on negotiations around that? The second is really, if I look at the guidance for the full year on the constant currency sales growth, if I take the bottom end of the guidance of about 3%, at least on my numbers, that has you accelerating to about 4.5% in the second half of the year. I'm just wondering, should we think about that in terms of the end of some problems in Latin America? How should we think about that acceleration?
Okay, I will start from the second question and go to the first. Yes, in fact, as I told you before, in quarter two, the top line result has to be read in light of an unfair comparison quarter to quarter because of the instrument peak that we had last year, and also as stated, as a steep decline unexpected in Brazil that we expect to bottom and then start contributing to grow, but at least do not affect business negatively as it has affected in Q2 specifically. But also there are other effects. The one is the fact that we have just launched the 125 vitamin D, which is going to be a net contributor in the second part of the year. Keep in mind that we launched it in April, and in the first 2 months we have sales which are close to $500,000. So the launch of the product is doing extremely well, as well as our sales and results in the U.S. are accelerating. As again, as a result of the fact that the vitamin D effect is really smoothing out. And we expect the U.S. to be strong in the second part of the year. The last element is China. Typically, China accelerates and has a greater contribution in the second part, and in this case is even more important because we placed the 68 liaison in Q1, Q2, that they will come to full force and full effect contribution in Q3 and Q4. Now, as far as the U.S. lab reimbursement, I have to say that as far as our business is concerned, the only product that could have been affected because it's significant in numbers is vitamin D, which, as you know, follows a complete different dynamic. When it comes to the very large lab, as a LabCorp, for example, the pricing negotiation that was carried through already took in consideration some of this element, but was overly compensated by more business we got with other products. So for the time being, I see no red flag in the U.S. coming from discussion on reimbursement.
That's perfect. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Patrick.
The next question is from Paola Faglietti of Banca Akros. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good afternoon, and thanks for taking my question. I have two. The first one is about the molecular diagnostic. In your recent press release, you have announced the launch of the first molecular diagnostic test for onco-hematology by the end of the year. And so could you give us, please, more color about this? And the second question is, if it's possible, an update on the trend of gastrointestinal stool testing business now that you have launched five tests on the market. Thank you.
Okay. As far as onco-hematology is concerned, yes. We confirm the fact that we are going to launch BCR-ABL between end of quarter three and beginning of quarter four. We don't expect clearly any visible impact this year. However, this is a door opener for us to all the onco-hematology centers, especially in Italy, that we selected to be the pilot country for us. In Italy, there are 91 centers doing onco-hematology, of which 15 are part of, the relevant centers doing half of the volume in the country, and then the rest is spread out the other 75 labs. And we plan within two quarters to have all the main centers evaluating taking our product. So I think the success of this product is going to be measured more in our ability to fully penetrate the major center rather than the revenue contribution in Q4 or Q1 or Q2 of next year. And in that sense, we're going to give you an update on center penetration in Italy. As far as a GI stool, now that said, we have pretty much the full menu. The sixth assay is going to be launched by year-end. We have fully launched the product and this product line in Germany. And without disclosing any specific in terms of numbers, you see that in Germany today we are growing 16% year-on-year, double-digit. Our German business, for your reference, our German business sits between 35 and 40 million euros, so you can do some calculation there, and a good chunk of growth is related to the success of this product line. Germany for us was a tier one country because it's the number one market in terms of size in Europe for these products. And all these tests are concentrated in a relatively small number of big laboratory chains which are accessible and have responded very well to this product, as shown by the numbers. Tier 2 countries where we started are Italy and France, and we call them Tier 2, and we expect more to come next year because most of this business is regulated by tenders. And so we participated to tenders, and we expect the revenues to come to follow up in this country starting from next year. But so far, I would say, as expected, so it's doing very good for us. Key product for us is going to be the Calprotectin, which is scheduled to be launched by year-end. That product is key because of two reasons. One is a disease that is spread. I mean, the use of this product, which is used for irritable bowel syndrome, is spreading over in Europe and becoming very important, but also because this product, since it was developed by Diasorin, not under license from Meridian, can be registered in the U.S. And so we will proceed with FDA registration and have access also to the U.S. market, which is very big for this assay. And we are talking finally about a product highly reimbursed with low competition, with end-user pricing which sits between 7 and 15 euros per test. So it's going to be a success story starting from next year.
Okay, thank you very much.
The next question is from Scott Bardo of Berenberg. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you very much for taking my questions. So the first question just relates to the comment in the release about the extension of the collaboration with LabCorp in the US till 2018, or sort of for the next 3 years or so. Can you add any more incremental details to that comment? Are we assuming then that the sort of pricing concession, the sort of trade-off that you've had to accelerate the other platform, is it on similar terms over the next 3 years as it is this year, or is there some sort of step-down scale in price, or just to give us some sort of flavour as to how you see that, and in aggregate your franchise for CLIA, how you see that progressing with LabCorp over the next, over that forecast period, that would be helpful. Second question: would you please give us some sort of update on where we are with the Roche Cobas collaboration? How is that progressing with integrating with Liaison XL, and when do you expect to start to see some sort of revenue contribution and contribution to growth from that collaboration? So they're the first two, and I have one follow-up, please.
You're asking lots of questions, which are difficult to address because there are some confidentiality clauses in the points you raised with third parties. But let me just try to give you a sense of it. Let's start from LabCorp. LabCorp, we agreed to a 5 years extension, so is 2 plus 3. It's 3 plus 2. And part of the agreement was a combination of reducing vitamin D pricing and having access to 16 new assays, substituting other suppliers which were, and consolidating pretty much all the infectious disease testing into our platforms. And that was done. And the price concession was divided into two installments. The first one, so 50% of the price concession, was given by January 1st, and the second one March 31st. And the reason was that by March 31st we expected to have all the other CLIA non-vitamin D products up and running at LabCorp. So since they've implemented all the assays and now they're using routine, starting from March 31st, the full effect in pricing of vitamin D is there and measurable. Now, without getting into the, again, specifics, we are talking about a discount in the range of 20% for a growing business in volume, because their volume of vitamin D is still growing versus previous year, and which is overly compensated by revenues coming from the rest of the products. And overly compensated means that company expectation is that when everything is in full effect for 12 months, we expect to gain $1 million business coming from decrease of vitamin D price on one side and then offset by the rest. So net gain is positive. By the same token, very clearly from a strategic point of view, we go from being a one-trick pony with vitamin D, very high exposure, to a much broader collaboration with a very large player in the U.S. that continuously expands their activities, buying other laboratories. So in that sense, I'm very proud of this relationship, and as you can understand, there are a lot of other companies, also much bigger than Diasorin, that really wanted to get the vitamin D business, and at the end of the discussion, we ended up not only retaining that, but gaining a lot more. So that relationship is solid. As far as the Roche agreement, on the Roche agreement, there is a remember that the Roche project required them first to develop an adaptation of their cobas line to allow the docking to allow us to dock our Excel to it. And on that project, there is a 1-quarter delay, so we expect the feasibility of that to be completed in November. Which means that the docking station has been developed, and the reason for the delay is that they have more than one partner, so more than one platform that has to work with that extension, let me say, of their system, and it took more engineering than expected to get there. But now things are more controllable. I mean, the timeline is more controllable, and in November, the feasibility is there. By the same token, right after the summer, we will start commercial meetings in order to assign priorities in terms of tenders where we want to participate together. Having in mind that we will start a rollout of our system and their system together in the Q2 of next year. Very clearly, since we are talking about very sizable tenders, where the preparation takes several months, we want to identify, starting from year-end, those opportunities where we want to run for the business along with Roche. And we have in mind, as said before, Europe. We have in mind some countries in Asia, Australia, and Brazil. And finally, as far as Asia is concerned, is Korea, which is strategic for them, and where today we are under-penetrated because we don't we work there through a distributor. As far as what this opportunity does represent, again, that we cannot make any specific comment. What we said in the past is that today there are 200 to 300 megalabs. And everybody expects in the next 5 to 7 years that number to become 1,200, 1,300 labs as a result of the consolidation. Roche has a market share in that segment which is close to 50%. And we expect in the consolidation process Roche to maintain similar share of that market, working with us and other partners. So you can guesstimate what the opportunity would be in terms of Excel placements additional related to this relationship.
Thanks very much for those detailed answers. Just one last follow-up question, please. Just relates to your ELISA franchise, which I think is just over 14% of group revenues at the moment. Obviously, that business has been, being a slightly older technology, has been somewhat under modest pressure in the last few years. I wonder if you could just comment a little bit as to the developments in China at the moment. It's my understanding that you also need molecular-based tests to validate ELISA tests in that market environment, and given that your molecular offering is still somewhat in its infancy, whether that jeopardizes your ELISA business or creates an additional headwind we need to think about in the future for that business. Thank you.
Okay, if you refer specifically to China, for us, in China, ELISA is Murex, and just going by memory, I believe that our Chinese Murex business is probably in the €3-4 million range. This is what we have inherited from when we bought from Abbott at the time. The problem there, and I think we already saw the effect of it in the last 12 months, is that in some provinces they are making molecular testing in blood banks mandatory, along with immunoassay. So you need to understand, worldwide in blood banks, both molecular and immuno are running parallel. Whereas in China until today, because of lack of funding, they were only running immuno, and now they do molecular as well, again in some provinces. That means that in order to fund cost of molecular, they allow the immuno to be supplied by local companies rather than importing kits. Before, when immuno was the front line, they only allowed testing with foreign kit. So we took a hit already in the last 12 months. Is it significant? Not, let me say, in the grandeur scheme of things, it's not significant that much. I see more pressure and more effect, as you have seen this quarter, coming from the Brazilian fiasco. And I call it fiasco, meaning that we bought a significant business there from Abbott. We retain it through Abbott distributors by contract. By contract, we were supposed to transition the business from Abbott to a new distributor that is in place. In that transition period, we had some glitches where certain tenders that were supposed to start under the new ownership did not start and were delayed, and that explains the very weak quarter two that we had in Brazil, which is mainly driven by Murex. Again, I did comment before, if you look at Brazilian liaison revenues, they are fine, they are growing high single digits, so no problem there. Now, if you look at the overall Murex brand, because I think when we talk about ELISA, Murex as the lion's share of it, it does represent 40-50% of it today, the remaining ELISA business. Today we sell more in volume, so we continue to win tenders with Murex. But unfortunately, Venezuela and Brazil were countries where we were selling Murex at a high price. And when we lost that, we substituted these tenders with tenders in other countries. And Iran is an example. We won all the blood bank supply for ELISA in Iran for 2014. Which is very good in volume, but not at the same price as we were selling end user in Brazil. And again, the net effect, you see it on margins, in specifically in quarter two, because large shipments of Murex did happen in Q2 for the Iran tender. So overall, the ELISA business, we keep it and we try to keep it alive because it's strategic in certain geographies. It is becoming difficult to predict because it's becoming more and more large tenders in exotic countries. Let me call it that way.
Got it. Thanks very much again.
Yep.
Next question is from Romain Zana of Exane BNP Paribas. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good afternoon, and thanks for taking my questions. First question on the guidance, and just to clarify the driver that you expect to support such acceleration in H2. You mentioned the new launch of the recent launch of vitamin D test. Is there any other key driver that may support such acceleration, also taking into account that you will face tougher comps? And the other clarification is on the EBITDA. Could you just tell us what was the growth at constant exchange rate in H1, and I'll have a follow-up question then.
Sorry, Romain, you broke up a little bit.
So what did...
The first one, if I understand correctly, has to do with the top line.
Yeah, definitely on the top line. You mentioned the recently launched vitamin D test as one of the driver which could drive the acceleration implied by the guidance for the year. So I was wondering if there is any other key driver that can back, I would say, such acceleration, also taking into account the tougher comps for the remaining part of the year.
Okay. As far as the top line, I said before, I expect two things. I expect the 125, and I expect also the fact that in the U.S. we saw an effect on the vitamin D pricing, which was heavier in Q1 and Q2, and is smoothing out in Q3 and Q4 versus last year, whereas you have an acceleration on the Clia X vitamin D business now that the LabCorp agreement is in full force. The second, I expected that Brazil, that has been a drag in the first half, especially in Q2, not to be a drag as it has been before. And and this has to do with the top line growth. As far as the EBITDA at the constant exchange rate, we have an H1 of 2014, 81.3 million. Last year was 163 million full year. So if you keep in mind, if you take in consideration the expected growth at the top line, you see that the guideline is achievable.
Okay. How much did you say for last year H1 at constant exchange rate on the EBITDA? 100 and?
I don't have the H1 last year in front of me. The full year was 163.
Okay. Okay, and just a last question, please, on the gross margin, which dropped...
Sorry, Romain, just one comment. Remember that you have also, in the current first half EBITDA number, you have a one-off effect, which are related to the fact that we took in Q2 the full cost of restructuring France.
Yeah.
And in Norway, and altogether is a 1.2 million one-off effect that you don't expect to repeat in quarter two. Plus, on top of that, there is a one-off effect of 600,000 euros, which are related to the fact that a customer in Brazil went bankrupt, and this effect hit us in Q2, and we don't expect clearly to repeat it in Q3 and Q4.
And these one-offs are not included in the guidance, right?
No. What do you mean? I'm not a magician, so I could not foresee them.
Sure. And just last question on the gross margin, which has dropped significantly over the semester, while it has been pretty resilient so far. Should we understand that the trend will continue looking forward, or do you see any measures or catalysts to work over on the short term?
Listen, as far as the gross margin is concerned, unfortunately we don't share with you the standard margin. However, from a gross margin perspective, the effect that you see in quarter two has a lot to do with the Murex effect, and the fact that we have been shipping very large quantities of Murex product at a very modest margin. Modest, let me say, compared to the group margin, because they are related to large tenders in countries where the Murex price is relatively low.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
The next question is from Luigi De Bellis of Equita SIM. Please go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon. Three questions for me. The first one is on the restructuring. If I understood correctly, you expect a gain from restructuring in the next quarters. Could you quantify the impact if it's relevant for you? The second question, the placement rate of Liaison XL. Looking at 2015 and beyond, do you think that the placement rate of 400, 500 new Liaison per year is sustainable? In which geographies do you think to place this new machine, especially for 2015? And the last question on the strategy, looking at the U.S. market, characterized by a significant part of physicians' offices, how do you think it to a new format for your machine to target the U.S. market and increase the market share? Thank you.
Yeah, listen, I will use the reverse order because I remember the last question first. When it comes to the U.S., we see, as I think as we have discussed in the past, we see that the U.S. market is polarizing between very large customers, which are usually the fairly large private chains, and a surge in small-size facilities, which are either due to a consolidation of physician office labs today. Keep in mind that CLIA-certified labs, physician office labs in U.S., there are 15,000 labs, of which of a good size, meaning a size that where a Liaison XL could fit, we are talking about between 1 and 2,000. And when it comes then to a machine that is a half of the Liaison, you are probably talking about half of the total physician office labs in the U.S. Could be targeted with this new instrument, which, by the way, is what I think we discussed in the past, is going to be the footprint of our next generation systems, what we call the Liaison XS. So I see ourselves in the U.S. Consolidating our business in the large labs, selling specialties, and LabCorp is a good example, and then developing the installed base of Liaison XL into the hospital base, and having the hospital base for us is around 200 beds or the consolidated physician office labs. Today I think that the mid-sized labs in the U.S. Are going to be wiped out from the consolidation, because that is an area where the hospital is not efficient enough. So they are either bought out by the big laboratory chains, or they get consolidated into larger labs by hospital chains. And this was the last question. Now, the other question was about the placement of Liaison XLs. As you have seen, also in quarter two, we put 150 XLs. Net placements in the first half is 300, so we continue to fuel growth that way. I think that the drivers of Liaison XL placements are going to be, from a geographical point of view, I expect China to be an area, and the U.S. Specifically. China, because is a fresh new market for us, where we have a very large base of Liaison, and now in the bigger hospitals we can sell the XL. U.S., as said before, because now we are focusing our effort away from the private chains, where we already established, into the smaller hospitals with the XL. Europe, I expect Europe to be more, since we are fairly already consolidated in Europe, and we have a large install base. I expect a lot of placements of XL there going to replace the existing Liaisons. However, with a very positive effect in revenue growth, because every time we replace today a Liaison with a Liaison XL, typically we demand from customers an increasing revenues of 20,000 to 25,000 euro per year, which overall does represent a 20-25% increase in total revenue per placement. So even if the net number of systems in Europe may not change dramatically going forward, you're going to see an upraise in revenues, again driven by the fact that every time you replace an existing Liaison, you get more Liaison XL revenues. And the last question was
restructuring.
Restructuring, sorry, yes. As far as restructuring is concerned, it is mainly this quarter is driven by France. In France, we have had, today in France, France for us is the third largest market in Europe. We got hit by the vitamin D deflation, let me call it that way. It was the only country where we were disproportionately exposed by vitamin D. And competition on one side, but much more recently, the fact that they changed the reimbursement system in France for vitamin D has dramatically, let me say, hit our current business, to a point that the business has been reduced in the last, 18 to 24 months by 25%, and that had to be followed up by action. And so we are reducing our employees by 15%, restructuring the team to where it should be to support a 25 million euro business, 25 to 30 million euro business, with operational savings full year that we estimate between 700 to 1,000 to a million euros. Very clear, we took, according to the French law, we took full charge of it once we initiated discussions with the unions, and it happened in Q2. We expect some savings to come in the second part, but the full savings to be achieved in 2015, since that by the end of the year the procedure is going to be completed, people are out and the cost is up.
Thank you very much.
The next question is from Peter Welford of Jefferies. Please go ahead.
Oh, hi, thanks. Most of my questions have been answered, but I've got a couple, I think. So first of all, is it possible for you to actually give us the Murex sales number in the second quarter? And secondly, I wondered if you could give us an update on molecular diagnostics in terms of the number of analyzers that have been installed roughly across the geographies at the current moment in time, and if you give us some sort of feeling as to what the major sort of feedback from customers have been on that. And then finally, just returning to the EBITDA outlook, could I just confirm then that we should assume that both the 1.2 million restructuring charge and the 0.6 million Brazilian bankruptcy charge are both going to be excluded from the growth? We should consider them both to be excluded, given neither could be predicted. Thank you.
Let me start from the last one. I'm saying that in the 81.3 million that you see today, you have the effect of the 1.2 million, and you have the effect of the bankruptcy of the Brazilian account that is clearly not going to be there in the second part of the year. So then you're going to mathematically you see a non-negative effect of 1.8 million that you had in Q2, and you're not going to have in the second half. Now, the second question, then you had, molecular, I think, was your second question.
Yeah, that's right, the number of systems.
The number of systems. Going by memory, I would say that today we have out there systems between active and for evaluation 20 to 30 systems with infectious disease, which is not clearly what we expected. And is mainly related by the fact that in the infectious disease area where today we launched the product, very recently price competition has become tough to sustain. You can see it from all the pure players in molecular. If you take Qiagen, for example, which is a pure molecular player, they have an overall growth, I think, of 4-5%, whereas they used to grow 15-20%, and that is all driven by price. So we were caught into an area where customers are becoming less selective on quality and more selective on price. And this is why I'm saying that when it comes to onchematology, where we don't go against existing competition, but we go against the homebrew testing, I see more opportunities there for us as a newcomer rather than having to fight for an $8 per test on CMV, which is the current price today. Keep in mind the CMV used to be sold at $30 a test 3-4 years ago. So, as far as onchohematology, I believe that there is where the penetration should be easier, the pricing should be much more attractive, and last but not least, being a newcomer, it should be easier for us to move with the installed base. Keep in mind that when it comes to onchohematology, our products are not only usable on our systems, but they are also adaptable to the existing open systems which are available in all onchohematology labs, mainly provided by Qiagen and other players as research tools. So the issue of developing the installed base is not going to be there because the installed base is already there. And then your first question was Murex, yes. You want to know what are our revenues for Murex in second half?
No, sorry, in the first half or equally in the second quarter. You've talked a lot about Murex. Can you give us some sort of idea as to what the actual euro million contribution from Murex worldwide across all the different was in the results?
Listen, thinking about it, because it's a number that we usually don't give out, and this is because it's a competitive nature into it. It's pretty much us and Bio-Rad in that space going head-to-head, and I'm not really sure I want to give this number to competition, so I cannot, but I think that if you do some math with the numbers I gave you in terms of percentage, you can figure out ballpark what are we talking about.
That's great. Thank you.
The next question is from Paul van der Horst of Kempen. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you for the time and for the presentation. One quick question about vitamin D. So basically, in light of the United States Preventive Services Task Force draft recommendation against vitamin D screening in adults and the recent literature that points to the need to measure actually bioavailable vitamin D as opposed to the total vitamin D, do you expect an additional headwind for vitamin D here? Or do you already take this in account next to the, in addition to the increased competition?
Let me start with bioavailable. Bioavailable vitamin D today is pushed by a very little small company that has a patent on it. And I honestly don't believe that there is enough muscle behind that in order to change the opinion of the U.S. Physicians. I mean, as I said, starting from a few years ago when we were surfing the wave of vitamin D, we Diasori, had nothing to do with the fact that vitamin D became a blockbuster in terms of clinical use. It had all to do with a combination of media, supplementation availability, and science behind it. And so I don't think that today you can really affect, from a clinical point of view, the use and surge and adoption of vitamin D in the U.S. And in fact, if you think about it, the only way, the only countries where we have seen a reduction in vitamin D, this has never come from the fact that the physicians have been educated not to test, but by the fact that physicians have been forced not to test. So it's always a political reimbursement decision rather than an educational of what a physician should or should not do. Because our industry, the diagnostic industry, by definition, does not educate physicians because we don't talk to them and we sell to labs. So all the bioavailability story, I think, is a good paper, but not, I don't see it much developing, to be honest with you. As far as the usage of vitamin D in the U.S., I learned the hard way long time ago, since the beginning of the vitamin D story, that the U.S. is a very interesting market because there are a lot of different forces that they push up or down the usage of a product in the reimbursement system. I think that there has been a conscientious effort over the last 5 years to understand if vitamin D is testing is reasonable or not. There have been some groups talking in favor of it. There has been an attempt by Medicare to curb reimbursement, which was rejected already 3-4 years ago. There was a report issued by Institute of Medicine, which I think came up 2 years ago, recommending to proceed with supplementation in a certain way and also testing in a way that would have been unfavorable, but it did not hit the usage of vitamin D. So to make a long story short, for what I see today in the U.S., nothing that is happening is making me think that there is going to be a change in the trend of usage. There is clearly a change in the way vitamin D is reimbursed, mainly driven by the fact that the insurance companies are doing their good job in negotiating with the large labs their reimbursement. Keep in mind that if a large lab 3-4 years ago was getting $22-$23 for a vitamin D test from an insurance company, today I think they are down to $14-$15. Okay, so that is the trend that has affected the business. Surprisingly to me, the vitamin D volume in the U.S. is still growing. Single digit, I would say, low single digit, but it's still up, whereas I would have expected to be flat or slightly reduced.
Okay, thank you. Thank you so much.
Mr. Rosa, there are no more questions registered at this time.
Okay, thank you, operator.